Okay, we all agree that the cosmological constant problem is one of the most intriguing puzzles that we now face in theoretical physics. But there is little consensus about what we are to do about it. In fact, there are two cosmological constant problems. One is, why is the vacuum energy rho v is not huge? And the other is, why does it come to dominate the universe at about the epoch of galaxy formation, which is redshift of order 1? And I think it's fair to say that entropic selection is the only approach that addresses both of these problems. I think this is not a controversial statement. At the same time,
in principle or so far?
No, I think absolutely uncontroversial statement.
Depends on what you mean by a threat.
This reminds me of a former president. There is no secret, of course, that entropic approach has a dubious reputation. And these are some of the complaints that have been expressed. One is that it is unpredictable. And the other, as Savas put so poignantly with his Niels Bohr example, is that it robs us of challenges that would inspire future progress. So I'll try to address both of these concerns. So in this talk, I'll discuss some entropic models that have been suggested for the vacuum energy and how we can extract quantitative predictions from them. Of course, in entropic approach, you will never predict anything to the fifth decimal point. The prediction will necessarily be for a certain range rather than a specific precise value. But if vacuum energy is indeed variable, we might as well try to figure out how we best make predictions. I will emphasize the importance of prior probabilities, which is something that has not been much discussed here. And if time permits, I'll talk about entropic predictions for neutrino masses. And also, for someone looking for challenges, I want to point out that entropic approach presents challenges of its own, and I'll point out what they are. So first, before I get to specific models, I want to review the famous Weinberg's bound on LV. There was previous work before Weinberg by Linde and by Barrow and Tipler, but Weinberg's bound is more restrictive. So suppose vacuum energy density takes different values in different parts of the universe. The crucial observation that Weinberg made was that once the vacuum energy dominates, the universe starts expanding with acceleration, and the growth of density fluctuation stops. So any structures you formed prior to that are yours, but no further structure formation is possible. Then Weinberg observed that we don't see any galaxies at redshift greater than 5, so the vacuum energy should not dominate before that, because then there will be no galaxies at all. And then that means that the vacuum energy density should not be greater than the density of matter at redshift 5, which was about 200 times greater than it is today. And this is the bound. This defines the entropic range that beyond which galaxy formation is impossible. What often passes under the name of entropic principle is the statement that, therefore, such values of rho v will not be observed. And this is, of course, a trivial statement which does not deserve the name of a principle. The observation that this is an entropic bound, of course, is an important one. But the principle is totally trivial. Now, we can do better, actually, than this bound. Suppose, let's picture this universe. We have different regions. In some regions, vacuum energy is large, so it dominates at redshift much greater than 5, and there are no galaxies there at all. In some regions, it dominates at redshift of about 5, And that makes galaxy formation barely possible, so you have a few galaxies there. But most of the galaxies will be in regions where the vacuum energy dominates at or after the epoch of galaxy formation. And then there'll be a huge number of galaxies there. So now, if you ask where a typical observer is likely to find himself, it is in one of these densely populated regions where there are lots of galaxies. Giant galaxies like ours form at redshift of about 1, and their disks are even later. You would expect, therefore, that a typical observer will see that the cosmological constant dominates at the redshift of galaxy formation. And that naturally explains the coincidence problem that we have. Numerically, one finds that rho vacuum should be less or about 8 rho matter. And the observed value is about 2 to 3 rho matter. Notice, by the way, that this observation was made before the supernova data was advertised. Similar considerations apply to negative rho v. I'll focus on positive values in this talk. Now, to make this quantitative, or more quantitative, what we need to do is to calculate the probability distribution for the values of rho v that one can expect to observe. This distribution can be defined as being proportional to the number of observers who will measure rho v in the specified interval d rho v. Of course, we have no idea how to calculate the number of observers, but let's proceed bravely. So I can represent this probability distribution as a product of two factors. One is the prior probability, which is the fraction of the volume in the universe occupied by regions where rho v takes specified values. And the second is the number of observers per unit volume. Now, as I said, we have no idea how to calculate the number of observers, but in this case, what helps is that the vacuum energy density does not affect life processes directly. It affects the number of observers only to the extent that it affects the number of galaxies that will be formed. So we can, as a rough measure of the number of observers, we can use the fraction of matter that ends up in giant galaxies like ours, say m of 10 to the 12 solar masses. So let me call this fraction of matter f of rho v, and that will depend on vacuum energy density. The idea being that there will be a certain number of stars formed per unit mass, and then a certain number of those stars will have habitable planets.
Isn't there a very strong assumption
here that the
value of the
function is uncorrelated with everything else? Uncorrelated, you mean if you change the cosmological constant, whether or not you change other parameters as well? I'll get to this point later. So there is. I'm making an assumption. It's possible that other parameters can vary as well. But if we can, let's get to this point in a moment. At the moment, I agree with you. I'm considering a simple model where rho vacuum varies and nothing else, everything else is fixed. If other things vary, I'm considering a sub-ensemble in the universe, where I don't look at those parts of the universe where anything else is different except rho v. Okay? We have to worry about the prior, and it has to be, once we have a model, we want to calculate it from first principle, for example, from theory of inflation. But Weinberg argued that in a wide class of, that basically it should be constant. Weinberg basically said that it should be constant in the entropic range. His reasoning is that entropic range is so narrow and the natural range of variation of rho v is so large that any function varying on this huge scale will look like a constant in this tiny interval. The analysis of specific models shows that indeed this is true in a wide class of models, but by no means automatic. But assuming that that's the case, the probability distribution is simply proportional to the fraction of matter clustered in galaxies, and the calculation of that is a standard astrophysical problem, which has been discussed by a number of people. In the Press-Schechter approximation, which is a reasonably good approximation, one finds this simple answer. This error function, rho matter is the density of non-relativistic matter, sigma is the density contrast on the galactic scale, and it doesn't matter at what time you evaluate this product, rho matter times sigma cube, because it remains constant during the matter era. So at any time during the matter era, you evaluate the value of that, and this gives you the probability distribution. So then if this model describes reality, then this gives the answer to the question of what is the probability that an arbitrarily picked observer in the universe would measure a given value of rho v. Now, there is no new principle involved here, so we don't really have to invoke any entropic principle. If any principle is needed, it is what I would call the principle of mediocrity, which is the assumption that we are typical. So once we have this probability distribution, of course it has tails, and we can be arbitrarily far along the tail, but our prediction would be at any confidence level that you are comfortable with, that you can take the appropriate range of the distribution, say within 2 sigma, we predict that the range should be such and such. For that distribution that I showed you, if you take this dimensionless combination, which I call y, over there, this is the distribution for y. And the 2 sigma range for y is given here. And now what you can do, you can express this rho matter and sigma in terms of the presently observable quantities. I'll skip this algebra and just show you the results. So on the vertical axis, I have sigma 8, which is the measure of density fluctuation. It is not on the galactic scale, on a scale somewhat larger, of 8 megaparsecs. And this is the omega vacuum. That is the vacuum energy density in units of critical density. Now, these between the solid lines is the 1 sigma region of the distribution, and between the dashed lines is the 2 sigma region of the distribution. And this is the WMAP observation with 2 sigma error bars. So you see that it fits very comfortably in the 2 sigma range of the distribution. Now for this calculation, I assume that the prior probability is flat, as Weinberg argued. Now to show you that this prior is not unimportant, let me show you what happens if I take a mildly different distribution, prior distribution. For example, if I assume that rho prior is proportional to rho v instead of being flat. Okay, in that case, I get something very different. Basically, this distribution grows, favors larger values of rho v, so it pushes the distribution to the right, and now you are very much outside the 2 sigma region. Now, of course, many people worry what happens if other parameters are also variable, and this is a very legitimate concern. And it needs to be investigated. So we have to consider models where not only rho v, for example, sigma also varies, and such models have been considered. However, you need a model, right? For rho v, we assume the flat distribution. For sigma, there is no good argument what the prior distribution should be. There is no reason to expect that the distribution for sigma is flat. If you give me inflationary models, which gives a distribution for sigma, I'll give you the prior distribution, then I can calculate. But no model, no prediction. For some variables, we can sort of have good arguments for what prior distribution is, but we need better models for the number of observers. That is, for number of habitable stellar systems. because the this very simple model that I used for, that simply amount of matter clustered in galaxies is not good enough, because for example if you change sigma, if you increase the amplitude of density fluctuations, galaxies form early and become very dense. So clearly the number of habitable stellar systems depends not only on how massive the galaxy is but also on how dense it is. So one needs, and I think at, even at present one can construct one can do better than I did in this estimate and construct models of some dependence on sigma. But this has not been done yet. By necessity, for a long time, we'll have to focus on parameters that do not affect life processes directly. Because if I start varying electron mass, then I get myself in a complete mess because I don't know how sort of emergence of life and properties of life depend on electron mass, so I cannot calculate any probabilities. I can, of course, find entropic bounds, for example, requiring that atoms should exist. But then I'll make predictions which are guaranteed to be correct, right? So to make meaningful predictions, I think, for a while, we have to focus on parameters like this that do not affect life directly. So getting back to the cosmological constant of vacuum energy, an entropic approach naturally resolves both cosmological constant problems. Right? It explains why rho v is small, it explains why it dominates at about the epoch of galaxy formation. However, it requires a particle physics model that would allow rho v to vary from place to place, and it requires a cosmological model that would let us calculate the prior probability. And note that we need p prior more or less constant, not too different from a constant. Otherwise, the successful prediction will be lost. So let me now discuss some models that have been suggested.
How do you know that these parameters that you think do not affect life substantially?
Like lambda, like vacuum energy? Neutrino mass? I say it doesn't affect life directly, right? We don't know even what it is, and if you change it, how will it affect... of course, you say that if there may be correlated dependences, sure, but you need a model, right? If you have your discretum, then you have so many parameters that I think all parameters can be varied independently. Then I am all set. I'll just choose a just parameter, choose a sub-ensemble where everything else is fixed and I just vary lambda.
There are incredible studies in discrete, it's sort of obvious that you
of course. I think we're...
But the discretum is definitely not a continuous function of all of these parameters. Everything jumps wildly as you jump between two places which both have no cosmological.
No, no, this is one of the points that I'm going to make, if you're interested just in lambda. However, what I'm saying, if the discretum is so huge, then I can find... Suppose I'm interested just in parts of the universe where rho vacuum takes different values, but mass of the electron is fixed to its present value to a high accuracy. Since the discretum is so huge, I can sort of adjust these fluxes so that the mass of electron is this value. But I'll find regions where lambda is different, but mass of electron is fixed. Those regions will not correspond to nearby values of the fluxes, of course. It will be very different configurations. Okay, but I think we cannot do better at present than to consider models for separate parameters, right? If you allow, if lambda changes at the same time you have to change the mass of electrons, then forget it. That, of course, this prediction for lambda is just a coincidence, and we have no explanations. But to move on, the simplest model is a scalar field model, where we have a constant, cosmological constant, which is huge as we expect it to be, and there is a variable part, v of phi. One of the simplest choices is just the mass term for phi. So if these two terms are of opposite sign, for example, rho lambda is negative, then there is some range of phi where rho v is very small, near this value of phi zero. And that's the relevant range entropically. Now, for this model to be relevant, the slope of the potential has to be extremely flat, because phi, of course, will tend to roll down to the minimum, and we want it to roll slower than on the present, to roll very little on the present Hubble scale. And that means that this m has to be tiny, 10 to the 90 m Planck. Of course, this is a tiny number which calls for an explanation, and I will get to that a little later. Maybe an even more severe problem, if you want to address it from the viewpoint of string theory, is that this value of phi zero is also huge. It's about 10 to the 60 m Plancks. So if you think of phi zero as a modulus field, there'll be problems with getting that. But if you want to entertain this possibility that it is a scalar field that is responsible for the vacuum energy, then we want to calculate the prior distribution for phi from the theory of inflation. Flat prior for rho v corresponds to flat prior for phi, because they're related by this factor, and in this very little range, v prime of phi is a constant. So the probability distribution can be calculated using the methods of stochastic inflation. As Alan Guth discussed in his talk, inflation is generically eternal. So we have these regions which are inflating here, which are blue in this simulation, and the yellow regions are thermalized regions. And our visible universe is a tiny part of one of these thermalized regions. If you put a nearly massless scalar field in this setup, it will be randomized by quantum fluctuations. So it will take all its possible values in each of these thermalized regions. So the question now is, how do you calculate the probability distribution? Well, Alan, in his talk, said that this task is rather ambiguous. I would say that there is a class of models where it is, where we don't know how to do it, but there is another class where we do know how to do it. This is the space-time structure of this, sort of the space-time slice of that universe. So this is the time direction, and this is the spatial co-moving coordinate direction. So you see that we start with an inflating patch, and then we have thermalized regions forming, and they continue forming indefinitely. So these different thermalized regions are causally isolated from one another. These boundaries look like they are vertical, that is time-like, but they are not, because the expansion of the universe has been factored out, which is exponential. If you multiply by exponential factor, then these boundaries sort of open up, and this is what becomes the boundary, basically, is the Big Bang from the guys living in this thermalized region. And this Big Bang is an infinite space-like surface. So observers in this region find themselves in an infinite, nearly homogeneous universe, and inflation is to their past, and these universes are alike, so all of them are statistically equivalent. Now, if I have my scalar field, it varies within each of these universes. So if I'm an observer in one of the galaxies, say, in this universe, how do I calculate the probability distribution? I just take a big volume in my universe. I don't really know, and I cannot get into these, any other of them. I take a big volume in my universe, and I look at the number of galaxies in each region with each value of rho v. And I get some distribution. If somebody else in another region does the same experiment, the result will be the same, because all these regions are statistically equivalent. So this is the prescription I suggest for calculating the distribution. Now, Alan and Andre Linde are not entirely convinced that this is the right or only thing to do, but I'm working on them. So, yes. Okay. In any case, in this particular case, actually, Andre agrees with me that if you have this nearly massless field, quantum fluctuations randomize it and tend to make the distribution flat. Right? If it is exactly massless, the distribution will be exactly flat. The counteracting effect is the regions where the potential is a little higher, inflate a little faster. So you will have some extra weight put on higher values of the potential. And you can estimate when this effect becomes important. As a result, you get this range of masses for which you get a flat distribution. And although the mass is very small, you see that the range is many, many orders of magnitude. So you don't really have to fine-tune to any particular value. Now, there is also has been discussion of four-form models, starting from Brown and Teitelboim, and it became rather popular recently. And here, the four-form is a constant in four dimensions, and it makes a contribution to the cosmological term, to the raw vacuum, but it can change through brain nucleation. And this change across the brain is Q, which is the charge of the brain. Now, again, quite similarly, these values of rho v will be randomized by nucleation of brains during inflation. And you get a pretty similar picture. You need to make the charge very small, again, so that the spectrum of the values of rho v is very dense. So again, you have this small number to explain. And again, you have a large range of parameters, that is nucleation rate Q and inflation rate, that in which the prior probability is constant. I will not write down the condition here. Now, of course, the very interesting possibility that has been much discussed here is the Busso and Polchinski model, where you have a large number of fluxes. So now you don't really have to assume that the charges of the brains are small, but you get a dense spectrum for the vacuum energy because you have a large number of these fluxes. Now, the problem is that in this case, you don't really get a flat prior distribution, at least it's not clear why it should be flat. The reason is that nearby values of rho v, like for example this point and that point, have very similar values of the vacuum energy. They lie on this near this circle, but they correspond to very different values of the fluxes. So eternal inflation will produce regions with all possible values of the fluxes, and they will be in these separate bubbles. Interior of each bubble will be an infinite open universe. Now, unlike the case that I described in this picture, it's not clear how to compare the probabilities in these different universes. Because if you imagine that some property takes one value in this thermalized region and another value in that thermalized region, but it is homogeneous in each of them, we have no idea how to compare them, because both have infinite volumes, and it's not clear how to compare them. Similarly, for these different bubbles. So my expectation would be that the prior probability in the discrete term for OV is something like this. Although, as I said, we don't really have a good prescription for calculating this prior probability. I'm pretty sure that if we keep working hard, we'll come up with a prescription, because there should be an answer to the question of what is the probability. but we don't have it yet.
We consider this to be a feature in the sense that if, you know, naturally, if there is a probability, once you can calculate it, it will naturally be a function of the fluxes. And even if it is a very strong function of the fluxes, because of this garbling that is going on, well, you just end up, you know, in the entropic range, the most at the value that happens to have the most probability in that range. But you're not pushed to one of the extremes of the entropic range, which would be the problem.
Well, I would say that if this is entropic range, for example, here, since these different bubbles went through sort of through a number of those points, through several nucleations, right? And each of them involves exponential expansion. I would expect that the probability jump from one point to the next is exponential factor, right? So within each range, there will be one point which dominates, right? Now, where that point is supposed to be, if I have the entropic range, I would expect, well, you can expect it in the middle of entropic range. That's about 100 raw matter, right? So then how do you explain that we observe the vacuum energy so small? I mean,
all I'm going to say is it's no worse than a flat distribution.
It is.
Why is that?
Because this distribution, if indeed in each range it is dominated by one or few peaks.
Very small sigma.
Huh?
A very small sigma.
Sigma.
That's what I said.
Yes. It is worse than flat. It is like delta function distribution, more or less. And delta function is not in the right place. If you're lucky, it will be in the right place, but it's probably not, won't be. Okay, so now as advertised, I want to suggest some challenges to fundamental theory. So if we return to these models with scalar field or Brown-Teitelboy type model, which gives us flat distribution, the challenge is to explain these small parameters m or q. And a few ideas have been suggested. One is by Weinberg, Donohue, and Demopoulos and Thomas. The idea is that what if the renormalization of the scalar field is huge? Well, then for canonically normalized field, basically the range of the field becomes huge and potential gets stretched and so forth. But there are no specific implementations of this idea now, so if someone can come up with one, that would be great. That's not an explanation, but well, if you, Savas perhaps should defend this.
We're describing what you want to get. There is no theory which gives you a lot of C.
Okay. All right, another repackaging.
We can discuss this. There are advantages to this repackaging. For example, you don't need to deal with transplantian waves. Z can come from low energy physics.
Okay, another possibility is that if you have a four form which gets mixed with a pseudo Goldstone boson. That we discussed with Ghiadvalli. Let me just briefly say how it might work. So if you have a pseudo-Goldstone, like an axion, it is a cyclic variable, and it has axionic domain walls, and it changes by 2 pi across the wall. Now, if somehow you get a mixing term between your axion and the four-form field, then the value of this flux F also changes across the wall by the value Q. And also the axion acquires a mass. So instead of being cyclic variable, now it has a mass. So it is like m squared phi squared superimposed on oscillations on the cosine potential. So basically it's open up this axion and the range becomes effectively infinite. Now once you did that, so this is one step, is to extend the range. You can now suppress this value of Q or M, which are related, both proportional to this coupling kappa, by imposing a discrete symmetry. And so this model works. The problem is, how do you get this mixing? in the low energy effective theory. And we don't have a very good answer for that. So I notice there is a revolution in string theory every few years. And so my hope for the next revolution is that it might provide these very extremely flat fields with extremely flat potential, which would be very helpful in this regard. Very briefly, let me mention what happens in more complicated models with several scalar fields. In those models, not only the vacuum energy, but also the slope of the potential can vary from one point region of the universe to another. And you end up with a prior distribution for OV, but also for the slope. If the prior favors small slopes, basically these models don't differ from the models where only one field is present, and you expect the effective equation of state to be W equal to minus one. But if the large slope is favored, then you find out that probability distribution is pushed towards the marginal slopes, that is where the slow roll condition is only marginally satisfied, and then the universe tends to recollapse on a time scale comparable to the present cosmic time. And this has observational predictions, as these people have discussed. And you can obtain both types of behavior by choosing different potentials VFI. So if this really observed the predictions for the slope, that would be very hard to explain by anything other than entropic selection, right? Because that would be another coincidence. Okay. Also very quickly, neutrino masses. Let me entertain the possibility that the neutrino masses vary from place to place as well. For example, these fluxes in the Brown-Teitelboehm types model can, in the low energy effective theory, couple to neutrino, to the operator determining the neutrino mass. Then you'll have different values in different regions. The interesting quantity is astrophysically is the sum of all three neutrino masses. The total contribution of neutrinos to the density of the universe is proportional to that. So what I call m nu here is just the sum of all three. And the important point for entropic selection is that the value of the neutrino mass affects the growth of density fluctuations. Neutrinos do not cluster on the galactic scale, light neutrinos. They free stream from overdensities. And that slows down the growth of density fluctuations. So if you increase the neutrino mass, you suppress the growth of density fluctuations and reduce the number of galaxies by this factor over here. So then if you do the same type of analysis as I described, you find the probability distribution, which is peaked at the sum of electron masses of about 1 eV. And the 90% range of the distribution is between 0.1 eV and 4 eV. On the upper side, astrophysical bounds are stronger than this, so this bound 4 eV is not very interesting. But on the lower side, it is interesting, because if neutrino masses are actually what is suggested by the mass differences, then you would have something like 0.04 eV, which is significantly beyond that range. So if indeed, as this distribution suggests, the sum of electron masses is somewhere near 1 eV, that would mean that the masses are degenerate. And that value would also suggest that it is entropically selected, because it is just the value, as Savas expresses it, that we would live dangerously if the sum of neutrino masses would be somewhat greater than that, then the dense galaxy formation would be strongly suppressed. So in conclusion, entropic approach naturally resolves both of the cosmological constant problems. I guess this is the main achievement that it can claim. Predictions for the vacuum energy are in good agreement with observations if we assume a flat prior, and the flat prior is indeed naturally obtained in a class of models. However, scalar field and brain nucleation models that give that flat prior need to come up with some natural explanation for these extremely small parameters that are required. In Busa-Paczynski type, type models, which lead to a discretum picture, we have to figure out how to calculate the probabilities. But it's not clear that a flat prior is going to be produced. Now this final point, which of course will not appeal to everybody, but this picture of eternal inflation, which is, I think, is an inevitable consequence of inflation, is a picture of what happens beyond our observable universe on superhorizon scales. And you would think that since it is beyond our observable universe, then there is no way to test that picture. However, this entropic approach, if indeed some parameters change from place to place in this universe, then calculation of these prior probabilities gives us at least some, although very limited, way of testing this picture of eternal inflation. Okay, thank you.
I assume there are some questions.
I always thought that the cosmological constant problem had something to do with the quantum theory, in the sense that you're comparing lambda with M Planck to the 4, and M Planck involves H bar. Why is it that all your arguments are classical?
All the quantum theory is in here. So you calculate your diagrams, you calculate your contribution to lambda, you end up with a huge number. It is this rho lambda, right? But then if in addition there is some field with a potential V of phi, which changes in some range, then for some value of this phi, it will compensate whatever lambda you calculate. So I'm not throwing away all the quantum contributions to rho lambda.
This is a very interesting point about the prior for our model. I think if you think about the very, very large numbers that Alan was mentioning, if you really have a probability, a volume-weighted probability, then since these volumes are so enormous, you lose the anthropic selection. You really have volume selection. It's much more likely we're going to live in a rare fluctuation in the large volume region, rather than a typical galaxy in the anthropic range. And my own prejudice is that these large volume-weighted factors aren't realistic, and that it's going to be, at the end of the day, some smooth probability distribution, such as comes out of some Hartle-Hawking-like or other wave function. And so that leads to a relatively smooth prior. But I mean, this really raises the bigger issue of what is the measure in this whole picture.
So you're saying this is in models, you're saying this is only in the discretum picture, or this is a general?
I think it's a much more general point, right? That even
with the small steps of the original Brown-Teitelboehm model, if you take those small steps, but you know, exponentiate that in the way that Alan discusses, you still don't have a flat prior.
Indeed, if you have small steps, then as I said, the distribution where you have potential a little higher, it expands a little faster, so you tend to get an exponential distribution in the end. However, in this product, this thing, the fraction of clustered matter, also exponential. And that is a pretty fast exponential. So if you have indeed these very tiny steps, then I can guarantee you that this will win. Of course, you have one exponential against the other. And of course, you cannot avoid considering them both.
Would it be not more natural to expect the cosmological constant to also depend on where we are in our observable universe? In other words, can you exclude on anthropic arguments a spatial dependence of the cosmological constant?
Well, I'm assuming spatial dependence, but you're asking about spatial dependence on a much smaller scale.
Our universe.
In models that involve inflation, this is hard to arrange, right? Because inflation tends to stretch the wavelengths of everything. But for example, if you take the model with brain nucleation, if the brain nucleation rate is very high, then somewhere there is a brain, there is a bubble that is expanding in our visible universe. It's going to hit us at some point. So this is a possibility. But for the scalar field, it's hard to, inflation will tend to sort of to smooth it out and scale much bigger than the visible universe.
Any other questions? Okay, let's thank the speaker again.